I did what I could to keep the rat and I engaged with each other. I was feeling sick, lonely, bored, and I was starting to wonder, what the hell do I think I'm doing here? And the rat was becoming my lifeline.
He could tell you your life story without you uttering a word. He could tell you your family secrets, things that you may not have even known. You go home to your mama and she'll be like, yep, actually, that happened. I've been meaning to tell you about that.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Jessica Hankin.
And I am Laura Wexler. And this week on the podcast, Spiritual Healing, two tales about seeking insight and enlightenment in far-flung places.
Before we get started, we want to thank the Park School of Baltimore, which is an independent, non-sectarian, pre-K through grade 12 school located just outside of Baltimore.
So this first story is told by Julie McDonald, who is actually a writer and teaches English at a community college in Las Vegas. She used to live in Baltimore, so she flew out to share the story. And boy, am I glad that she did. I feel like as strange and kind of unique as this story is, it captures something that's really human, which is a desire to understand, I guess, really the meaning of life and to poke beneath the surface to find some answers that seem not to be available all around you. So please take a listen to this story from Julie McDonald.
So 14 years ago, my husband was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer and told that he had 6 months left to live. He actually lived for 5 more years. And in that time, he underwent every excruciating treatment that you can imagine. By the end of the 4th year, I was starting to lose it. I was cracking beneath the grief and the pressure, so I made what seemed like the obvious choice to me at the time, and I booked a trip to the Amazon rainforest in Peru to drink ayahuasca with a shaman. Made sense. I wasn't even trying to hide the crazy from myself. I knew that I was going to the jungle to find a magical way to stop my husband from dying. Of course, that isn't what happened. However, the trip had a profound effect on me. When I got back on the plane, I felt like I'd left a ton of grief and other baggage behind me. And I'd also been a little bit right about ayahuasca, that there's something magical going on down there. And I just couldn't look away from it. A year after my husband died, I went back. And after that, about once every year or so, a little voice in the back of my head would say, "It's time to go to Peru." And I would just listen. So by the 5th time I'd gone down there, I'd drunk ayahuasca about 25 times. And I was getting really tired of drinking ayahuasca. But I felt like the jungle still had something to show me. So 3 years ago, I decided to push my exploration to the next level. And I completed what is called a Sanango plant diet. And this experience is something that most ayahuasca shamans do as part of their training. It involves 11 days of isolation in a hut in the jungle with no books, clocks, or electronics. And the only food you're allowed to eat is white rice and hard-boiled eggs with no seasonings. It's delicious. And the reason for that is to eat the most dead diet you possibly can so that when you drink the Sanango, you're more fully interacting with this plant spirit. And for scheduling reasons, the place I went to wasn't the same as where I had been going. This one was an hour's drive into the rainforest and then another hour's hike through mud, and I had a little hut that was 20 minutes farther out. On the first night, I did the first ceremony with the shaman. He came to my hut with some Sanango branches, and we sat on the floor, and we scraped the bark off of them with knives, and then he made a tincture, which I drank. And Sanango is not a hallucinogen, but it is a mind-altering drug. The first night, I didn't really feel anything. I fell asleep listening to the sounds of the jungle, and then I jerked awake in the middle of the night because something was walking on my legs. I grabbed my flashlight just in time to see this big old rat butt disappearing over the end of my bed. In the morning, when the shaman came to bring me my eggs, I told him about the rat, and he laughed really hard. I really liked this guy. We couldn't speak each other's language, but I sensed that he had a beautiful spirit. In my hut, I had a bed and a rocking chair. My only responsibilities were to eat the eggs, drink my medicine, and I also had to take a bath every day. And this consisted of walking to a stream nearby and dumping buckets of cold water on myself. The first few days were novel. I noted the way my thoughts were running at quadruple speed and on about 8 different tracks at once. For example, here were my regular thoughts about food and the weather, and here I was writing this crazy novel, and here I was writing an advice column, the questions and the answers, and so on. It was fun. I discovered that the rat who had visited me had built a nest in the ceiling, and I learned to engage him by sitting in my rocking chair and telling him nonsense stories while he gazed down at me. Sorry. By the fifth day, I noticed that I was getting weaker, and I really wasn't having fun anymore. The thought trains were starting to torture me. I was gagging when I tried to eat the eggs. I think I was only sleeping about 5 hours a night, and as soon as I woke up, the thoughts were just... And I started calling for that rat first thing each morning. And I did what I could to keep the rat and I engaged with each other. I was feeling sick, lonely, bored, and I was starting to wonder, what the hell do I think I'm doing here? And the rat was becoming my lifeline. I can hear somebody saying, Jesus Christ, sorry. As the days wore on, things only got worse. I gave up any hope I had of getting something positive out of this experience. By the 9th day, I seriously began to worry that this time I had taken things too far and that my brain would never again return to its natural state. I wanted to quit, but I had been warned ahead of time that I couldn't quit. To do so would be to invite insanity, institutionalization, and extreme misfortune. The only way to undo that choice would be to repeat the diet for 22 days the next time. I believed what I'd been told enough to be frightened by it, and I knew there was no way in hell I could do that diet again. So I stuck it out. And in the final days, one of my thought loops was just going, you broke your brain, never be the same, you broke your brain. When the diet was finally over, the shaman came to get me. I said goodbye to the rat, and I thanked him for the company. The next day, I wasn't feeling right. I knew something was still wrong with me, and I told the staff, and they said, it's normal, you're going to be fine. So we set out on our hike back to the road, and about 20 minutes in, my legs gave way, and I collapsed in the mud. I couldn't walk anymore. The staff companion went back to the center, and she left me in the care of this adorable 15-year-old Peruvian boy, and he held a giant leaf over my head to keep me shaded while I lay in the mud. And then the staff returned with the retreat center owner, and I was forced to cling to his back like a monkey and ride him out of the jungle. It was incredibly intimate and awkward as we sweat all over each other. When we finally got to the road, a car was there waiting for me, but I was dripping with sweat and covered in mud, and I just was like, fuck it. I got some fresh clothes from my bag, and I stripped down to my underwear on the side of the road. And right at that moment, this little group of men carrying bags of rice on their heads walked by, and they're all going... So the cab takes me straight to the airport where I discovered that I've missed my flight. And then back to town, and I check into a hotel. I buy a bottle of electrolytes and I drink it. And then I go to this restaurant that's like the Peruvian equivalent of a dairy freeze, and I order a fried chicken sandwich and French fries. And when I bit into that sandwich, the salt and the grease and the flesh, it was almost more than I could bear. Tears began to smart in my eyes, and I experienced a moment of unadulterated joy. Maybe that's what I'd been secretly looking for all along. As I ate the sandwich, I thought about my adventure. I had suffered, and I did not feel wiser or purer. A part of me was disappointed with this outcome, but a bigger part was relieved. I knew that I'd found my way to get off the path of Peruvian shamanism. It was time for me to go home. The next day, I got my legs back and my mind back, and I made it there. I still think of the rat from time to time, and I hope he's doing well. Thank you.
I just love the image of her sitting and eating that sandwich after experiencing. I mean, just.
It was interesting because I worked with her on this story a lot. So we had many conversations, and I'm really interested in all sorts of, you know, psychedelic thought experiments and adventures. And I kept saying, like, weren't you scared? Didn't you feel like you were going, you know, didn't you feel upset that you were here in this hut, you know, dehydrated with a rat, all that? Like, it wasn't what you thought it would be. And she just really had this attitude of, it is what it is. It will be what it is. And I just thought, I really loved that. I don't know. I just tend to be someone who's like clear on what kind of experience I want to have. Mm-hmm. And then when I don't, I can be disappointed. And she really was open, although I think wisely decided not to pursue this line of inquiry
She had enough data to make her decision. So, yeah.
That's so great. And that rat. Before we get on to the second story for spiritual healing this week, we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. You can find them at baltimoremagazine.com and also check out their podcast, Local Flavor Live, which captures all the happenings in the local food scene. We want to thank Golden West, a vegan forward restaurant in Hamden on the Avenue. Super fun place to eat, hang out at the bar, go to events, so you can check them out.
So this next storyteller, Olu Butterfly, has been a spoken word artist in Baltimore for a number of years, and now she's a leader in that community.
Yeah.
She works with many, many youth, mentors them. She's just well respected everywhere she goes, and she's an amazing mother. So she shared this story about the complicated relationship she has with ancestry and with parents and with husband. And she did so while captivating the audience at the Senator Theater. So give a listen.
A few years ago, I was staying on the side of a majestic mountain, approximately an hour and a half outside of the capital city of Ghana. And when most people think of Africa, they don't think of cold. But I had to bundle my 1.5-year-old up and my 4-year-old up in lots of layers at night, and including a coat and shoes. And we were sleeping on the floor of a tent, myself included, and I was 4 months pregnant. So before you feel sorry for me, it was actually an ecstatic moment. We had just cleared the land, an important milestone to repatriation. It was the first time returning our family to the motherland after our lineage had been kidnapped and enslaved and brutalized. It was a beautiful moment. But in that moment, I found myself having the fights of my life with the love of my life. And if I could have gotten on an airplane that night and come back to Baltimore, I surely would have. But it turns out I couldn't get a flight out and I was stuck for 2 more weeks. So we decided to try African couples therapy. So if you were wondering what that is, I knew an elder in northern Ghana. He had helped me before. So he was a mystical man who defies Western logic. And if you saw him, nothing wizard-like about him, tattered clothing. And mostly what you would find him doing is farming. But he had the ability, he had the wisdom of a spiritual technology to see through to who you really are. He could tell you your life story without you uttering a word. And he could tell you your family secrets, things that you may not have even known. You go home to your mama and she'll be like, yep, actually, that happened. I've been meaning to tell you about that. So I felt like maybe he could help us. So we decided to take a 17-hour bus journey to see him. And this meant overnight, I was sleeping upright, trying to secure a baby in my arms as we bounced up and down over ferocious potholes, dodging left and right around goats that are sleeping in the road. And did I mention that I was pregnant? So we finally arrived, and we were able to have audience with him immediately, which is not always the case. He's a very important man. Sometimes his cell phone is ringing off the hook. And he decided to do, he started off with the divination, a spiritual technology where he sacrificed the chicken. And how this chicken died depends on whether we were able to proceed or not. So whether it's on its back or its front or what direction. So the message was favorable. Yes, we can proceed. So usually you don't have to say anything. Right away, he starts talking about your concern. But this time, he starts talking about my father who had passed away a few years before, who I didn't have a relationship with while he was alive. And he starts telling me that he's stuck and he needs my forgiveness and my mother's forgiveness to get unstuck. Good luck with that. So I'm thinking, like, this is not why I came. This is not why I took 17 hours. So then he starts talking about my partner's father, who at the time was still alive, and that they had a cloud of anger over them, partially due to the enslavement and the brutality. And so he's talking about our fathers, and I'm like, okay. So the prescription was to sacrifice a ram. Now, besides the fact that a ram costs a couple hundred dollars, I'm vegan, and I wasn't really excited about it, but I didn't have to kill it myself, and I didn't have to eat it. So I was like, okay, it's kind of like buying your friend a steak, you know. And so he was like, you know, so, but as I was looking at the ram, I'm like, I really need to know, why am I doing this? Like, what's the purpose? And the prescription was for the children in the village to eat it. And so he was like, you know, it's one thing for your concern, for you to cry out to the universe about your concern, but to transfer it to these dozens of beautiful children and have their souls cry out about your concern was the purpose. And so I'm like, okay, but what about the reason why I came? And so he's just real nonchalant about that. Like, oh yeah. So, you know, he said we came from the same place, and I knew he didn't mean physically in this life, because Baltimore and Chicago are two different places. And he said that we've known each other for many lifetimes, and our fathers used to drum together. And he prescribed that we go to see the tree, the lover's tree. So we go past the field, past another field, through another field, and there's this tree. And then I realized that we're not the only people who have relationship issues, because this tree is all mutilated and chunked out. And we pray, and we take a piece of it back to him, and he turns it into a powder. And the prescription is to bathe in it for 7 days, the whole family, the children and everybody. And so on our way back to our lovely, luxurious tent on the side of the mountain, on the last leg, I leave the whole thing in the taxi van. And so I'm devastated. My partner's like, whatever. And in the end, we're not together today. And so I would love to have some kind of like definitive relationship thing to share with you, like Dr. Phil, but I'm still deep in the mystery of what all of this meant. And all I know is he didn't give us communication tools, and we didn't deep dive into potential childhood trauma. He gave us a piece of earth to deal with some of the factors of life and family cycles and destiny. And so I'm still in the mystery of that, but I do know that I have to go back there because I owe him a tractor. He said that I was going to have a girl, and I did, and I have to bring him a tractor after I have a girl. So thank you.
What I love about that story is that I think she is able to hold in her hand both sort of what we would call kind of objective reality. She studied engineering as a college student, and or Western reality, and a kind of spiritual sense of reality and truth, which she would say is just as credible, that is based in Africa and based in her heritage for that. And it was just really interesting to hear somebody kind of go through what we would call couples therapy, but in a radically different way. You want to learn more about her, you can check her out. Her recordings are on YouTube. And as Jessica said, she does a lot of work with spoken word poets in Baltimore and around the country. So thank you for listening today. Before we go, we want to thank The Wine Source at 3601 Elm Avenue in Baltimore. Please check them out for any of your New Year's Eve libation needs.
We want to thank Maureen Harvey, producer extraordinaire. And we want to wish you the best 2020.
Because it's going to be awesome.
It's going to be terrible, guys. It's just a limited number of days, really, that humanity has. So just eat, drink, and be merry while we can. Right?
We'll see you back here next week. Thanks.